Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKeesick. We have an interesting episode for you tonight. A short, you see the title, it's Load Management. And we're going to talk a little bit about how the Ravens can help try and protect themselves from injury. Have a doctor on the show, David Patrick, joining us. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me on this.
You were, of course, you were there for the draft night. We really appreciated that. It might have been more than one day, in fact. And it was always a lot of fun to watch the draft. And David has some opinions that are going to ruffle some feathers here, but we're gonna talk about them and talk about load management. Now, first of all, let me just say, from a generalized perspective, the Ravens are a fairly forward team in terms of load management for the positions that are traditionally rotated, edge rushers and interior defensive linemen. They've been pretty good about minimizing snaps for their most important players, trying to get their most important players on for their most important plays.
And I agree with that, but I would push back a little bit. We haven't had a lot of interior defensive linemen in terms of our rotation recently. And even when Madubuike was healthy, I remember every week you talking about, we got to get less snaps for this guy.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And that's something that Madubuike, the year before his breakout year, he had not played well in the second half of the season, and he didn't play, I really said I thought he'd play better at 50% of the snaps than at 65% of the snaps. And then he played whatever he did, might have been closer to 70% of the snaps in his huge year. First of all, obviously, start with I'm not right about everything all the time, but second of all, the Ravens are fairly advanced in this way. Their defensive linemen in particular, they had very few guys who have been, like the Steelers interior guys who just play an unbelievable number of snaps. And the Steelers are known with Cam Hayward, Aaron Smith going way back, and Brett Kiesel and players like that, just getting extraordinary number of snaps per game from those players.
Yeah. I mean, the best ability is availability, Ken. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to quote the soon to be great coach, Jesse Minter. We want our best players to play their best when their best is required. And that is in December and January. And football is a violent game. And if your players are not there, or they're not healthy, or they get knocked out of the game, we just can't have that. I mean, we have a very top heavy team in terms of who is our best players, Lamar, Trey Hendrickson, mm-hmm. now Kyle Hamilton. We need these guys to be here. And really the thought experiment, the idea that if I was in the Ravens organization, I'd run to the analytics team and say, hey, I want you to look at basketball, where NBA players don't play a lot of games. Hey, look at baseball. Pitchers used to, when I grew up, 7, 8, 9 innings. And now after 3 innings and they're playing well, they might yank them until October. And then we watched this past World Series, and that one pitcher was pitching complete games or throwing 150 pitches or whatever. And this is a guy who had Tommy John. So I'm just thinking about football, which is way more violent, volatile. And these games matter so much more because there's so much less. Yep. And it's magnified and magnified because they're not extending the roster more, but they're playing more games. 17 games. It's going to be 18 games. We need our players healthy. And so I think that the Ravens should start looking into how can they make these players who are most important available later, because all the players we're going to talk about tonight miss significant games.
We can stick a pin in this, but I think Please. One of the things that needs to be determined very early in this process is, when are the most important snaps? Now, we know notionally that you have much higher leverage on third down. You have much higher leverage when the game is close and late, you have that. But there's other times when win probability is not determined, or the win probability models aren't that good, and they don't do a good job. And that's why you have so many comebacks from 1% chances to win and 10% chances to win, that I think the models probably don't get entirely, do a great job with that. But regardless, don't we need a metric for starters that gives us the importance of each of these plays? You could do it in several different ways, because baseball does it, your championship importance of certain events. It has your game importance of certain events. And they could at least do that for football in terms of the leverage on individual plays. It may even, in fact, be out there somewhere that I'm not really aware of it or haven't really inspected it closely, at least with what's going on. But, you know, I'd like to know what's the average leverage of the snaps played by Travis Jones versus Broderick Washington, say, in a past year, and see if what's the, you know, who's really getting the important snaps.
I think that that is literally just a mathematician away from being available, because before we talked today, after I got off work, I started running my AI machine and started asking, hey, can you compare some of these players in terms of how important they are? And it said, hey, football doesn't have war, but if we want to approximate war, I can crunch some numbers and make some comparisons, wins above replacement for these different players and what's elite at their position. Like, for example, Lamar Jackson, when he plays as a Super Bowl level, is like 3 to 4 war. And that's 3 to 4 extra wins.
Right. Beyond above average. Yeah. Above replacements are. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, for an example, an elite player, according to, you know, the AI's quick system model, would be for a pass rusher, a pro baller would be 0.6 to 0.9 wins. And Trey Hendrickson in his greatest seasons is above one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really, to me, is kind of how I was starting to look at, do I just think I know which players are the best quarterback, pass rusher, X wide receiver, or are there some numbers that kind of show, like, actually, these guys are really important. How can we maximize their value?
With all the money going to left tackle, who is the leader at war at left tackle? Did you see something there? Is it a PFF war number?
I didn't see the PFF war number, but I did run Ronnie Stanley's, and he's approximately 1.0, which is
per year.
Yes.
Career. That's surprising, because I wouldn't have think he was that much above average for his career, honestly, given.
But that doesn't compare it to other left tackles. I think it compares how important left tackle is potentially to other positions, because it impacts the quarterback so much, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I need to know how the thing is calculated. That's the problem. Right. When I hear it postulated or averred or whatever you want to call it, I need to now understand asserted. That's the best
way. I will ask my AI with confidence interval to break down its math, and I will send it to you after the podcast for sure.
All right. Well, that sounds good. That's fun. You have an AI agent? Is that what you have?
Oh, just like ChatGPT, but. Okay. I've been using it for several months, and I really put it through a scientific method. I'm like, no BS. Give me your confidence interval and everything that you give me, and then break it down. And I kind of challenge it, because I'm not good at math.
That's good. I'd be interested in learning how to use that in a meaningful way. It's a topic for another day.
Oh, for
so
sure.
Let's start with Lamar Jackson, because he's a player that there's two things has been true. The Ravens, has been very, very closely tied to him, as every NFL team's tied to their quarterback, but to Lamar Jackson, even to a greater degree, because he is so great. And he's also lost a fair amount of playing time to injuries. And also this last year, even when available, he wasn't healthy as he has been in the past.
I mean, correct. Last year, I mean, as soon as the Bills game was over, his movement patterns were off. And he missed 4 or 5 games. And then he came back and almost threw us into the playoffs almost single-handedly. I mean, he has missed significant time towards the end of the season. Again, to me, obviously the most important, 3 out of 8 seasons. Mm-hmm. And he's only getting older. So how long is the Super Bowl window where he's this effective? 3 years? 4, if we're lucky? 5, if we're lucky?
You're identifying an actual problem. No doubt about it, David. Here's what I'm challenging you to do is, what's your solution for this very obvious problem? Because every team has it. Every team has it. If their number one quarterback goes down, they're done. How do you fix it?
And I think that also emphasizes why it's so important to be first. Because if everyone does it, you don't get as marginal a benefit. So how do we do it?
In terms of injury management.
Injury management for the quarterback. And that means you bench Lamar in multiple scenarios. So we've seen him in an MVP caliber season probably miss about aggregate 2 games in terms of like sitting the fourth quarter because we're ahead so much. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Everyone would do that. You're winning. You're up big. It's the fourth quarter. Bench your best player.
You sit him the week before, week 18 when there's nothing on the line. Absolutely. Completely agree. But that's obvious. Now tell me the unobvious thing you want to do.
Unobvious would be definitely I would wait. Divisional games is more important, so I wouldn't sacrifice those. Potentially against big. AFC opponents who might involve tiebreakers and rankings, but certainly against NFC teams, and certainly waited prior to December. If we're out of a game, sit him. If we're up 7 points in the fourth quarter, sit him. You paid $5 million to a backup quarterback who last year beat two playoff caliber teams playing the whole game. Throw him out there, hand the ball off to Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter. And if we're up by a touchdown, bench Lamar. If they tie the game, throw Lamar out there and he'll do his magic, sprinkle his magic dust. So that's one thing that I would do, is that any time that there's an advantage, to sit Lamar so that he plays maybe 25% less snaps for the season, I think increases longevity for a Super Bowl run in that season and might even give us another season of prime Lamar aggregate over the next three seasons.
Okay, so notionally, first of all, let me start by saying I agree with you. If there was a way to play Jackson less and decrease his injuries, it would potentially be worth it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's the practical where I'm losing here, because there's no way in hell that anyone is going to think it's a good idea to sit Lamar down for Tyler Huntley up seven in the fourth quarter with the ball. Go ahead.
No way in hell is true until someone is brave enough to do it. I kind of said this note to you in terms of analytics. I remember 10 plus years ago watching Patriots Colts, the Belichick's on his 25-yard line, is fourth and two, and he goes for it, doesn't get it, and says that was the right decision, and everyone lost their mind.
Not everyone. Literally every mathematician who watched that said, of course it's the right call.
Right.
Of course it's the right call. Right. Finally, somebody has had the courage to do it. I don't think you're going to get a lot of even mathematicians to go along with the fourth quarter idea you've got. There's too much leverage in play, and that's where I go back to the leverage statistic is going to be at the heart of this. And it might be that the correct thing is to sit Lamar Jackson out in the first half.
There you go.
Okay.
Just reduce snaps. So that's one. Other things I would do with Lamar is what Coach Doyle said when he first started, that while Lamar's superpower is running around and doing an extended play, he has got to be better and more efficient in what the play is actually happening, because then the ball's out of his hands, Ken. I want him to do magic. He doesn't need to practice magic. He has that. I want less plays where he has to do it. So either we're sitting him in the first half, or Doyle actually develops him as someone who actually can say, 1, 2, 3, ball out. Guy doesn't look open, but I throw him open. I would love to see that more. I would love to see less inside runs.
Okay. Load management by play style is absolutely Lamar Jackson. So you're changing Lamar Jackson to be not Lamar Jackson.
No, I'm not changing him. I'm coaching him. I'm not saying, hey, Lamar, it's just football, coach. I'm just doing whatever I want. No, I'm actually going to coach you and say, this is the structure of what we're doing. This is the goal, and this is how we're going to get you there. We need you available. So when it's a big game, when it's fourth quarter, when it's January, you can do all of that. When it's not, I don't want you lowering your shoulder in October against an NFC team in the third quarter when we're up 10. Please don't do that.
Yeah, if you think back to 2019, Lamar Jackson and a cruise control win against the Jets took a large hit. The play, he went over 1,000 yards for the season. And it was not the kind of hit you ever want Lamar Jackson taking, certainly. And it was a pretty good year overall of him using the sideline very well. He avoided a lot of hits in total by just a lot of run out of bounds. Now, the prevailing wisdom in Lamar's play style in the years since has been that most of his runs have been on the inside, that the outside threat is a back, and he becomes the inside threat because he can read more of the field and be more dangerous. This last year didn't really work out that way because he was banged up and obviously had a tough year. But I'm 100% for if there's some way to efficiently find the plays that Lamar can take off, I think that can work. If it's you have to change Lamar, you have to break a thing to fix it. That's in Lord of the Rings. That's you've lost the path of wisdom. is Gandalf's response to that.
I'm also, to use your Lord of the Rings reference, I'm basically cheating here and saying, oh, well, Ken, we don't need to walk all the way to Mordor. The eagles who flew us back, they'll just fly us there. Yeah. We'll drop the ring and fly home. But I will look at John Harbaugh's tenure and not have rose-tinted glasses and say, yes, you developed Lamar and you created these offenses that were historic, but you didn't coach him as hard as you could have. You didn't create enough buy-in where he's still doing some of these things. I mean, he used to be punting balls. He's lowering his shoulder. He's just telling him, coach, I'm just running around playing football. Like, yes, that play is successful. But when you take a step back, you're potentially hurting the team. But he also hurt the team because the three times Lamar has been hurt bad, the three seasons he kind of lost were injuries behind the line of scrimmage. And so either we need to scheme or coach ball out, or we need to protect him more. So as mad as I was on Thursday when we didn't take Bane, that's because I'm emotional. Taking Ion, one of the best pass defending linemen to replace Falele at right guard, one of the best things you can do in terms of that war to protect Lamar.
Should be a significant upgrade there, no doubt about it. And you know, it speaks certainly to having a high quality offensive line is going to be something that's going to be important for Lamar, probably more so than having highly paid skill position players. And I've heard that said. I think that is probably the way to go. Yeah. But no, let's talk about it. Maybe not for Lamar, even though that's obviously the example that a lot of people want to talk to. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on some components of this, because I think what you're talking about is very difficult to practically implement. But where it would start, and you'd run to the analytics team first, and you'd say, which are the most important plays? Can you define that for me? And then you got to ask yourself a bunch of ancillary questions that comes to that if Jackson plays the 75% most important plays, and we can identify them and we can decide if Jackson's in the game for those plays, can he still be Lamar Jackson under those circumstances? And then if you ask him to, if you want to coach him differently and be a ball out quick quarterback, which I think would be a good thing to add to the repertoire. Don't get me wrong. I've talked about it the last, you know, many years. I'm positive on that. And maybe that'll keep him a little more healthy. And maybe it makes Bateman a little more effective. And, you know, there's all kinds of potential benefits could be added. Just, it's almost like adding another pass rush move to your repertoire for a quarterback. I have no downside to it. But if you're saying, I want to move 50% of his extended plays into ball out quick kind of situations, I think that's a much harder thing. I think you're potentially changing who Lamar Jackson is as a quarterback, which I think is probably, I don't think it'd be popular with Lamar. I don't think it'd be popular with the fans, which I wouldn't even care. And I don't think it necessarily gives you more wins in the end. After you break things up and you reduce the number of snaps he plays and you change the way he plays, I'm not sure you're at a better situation in terms of winning football games.
Right. And part of what we're not talking about, where it's a difficult pill to swallow, I think, is that I'm really talking about potentially sacrificing a couple of regular season wins to get us more likely into the postseason, which is more important. And I feel more comfortable doing that mainly because there is no second place team bye. So,
well, the second place situation is very significant. Two place seven. That's been the Bills' ticket to the divisional round every year. The Bills know it better than anybody in terms of getting through that first game. I'd strongly disagree with that. So the number one, first of all of the crap you hear from people who really don't know about not wanting a bye, it is just that. It is complete crap. Of course you want the bye. It's worth an incredible amount. It's worth taking some risk to get it. Yeah. The two seed, also worth taking some risk to get because of the advantage in terms of what the matchup is. You always play your second game at home. The earliest you're on the road is in the conference championship. You might play the conference championship game at home. All the advantages that go along with that are pretty darn significant when it comes to two versus seven.
And then maybe, again, it's your pushback of fleshing out the infancy of an idea into, hey, if we're in the running for number two or one seed,
right,
we keep pushing and we don't really implement this. But if we're falling behind, or the percentage chance that, you know, the Bills or the Chiefs or the Texans or someone is going to overtake us and we're just trying to get in the playoffs, don't care about that as much. We just need our best players healthy. And then I think that we can win.
Okay. I mean, from that standpoint, I certainly agree notionally with that. And if you can come up with championship leverage and you can come up with individual play leverage, it's not too far a jump to say, here's the number one seed leverage and the number two seed leverage and the number three seed leverage. And then you can decide based on a set of metrics like that, whether or not it's appropriate to play for a snap. I think this is going to be So while I agree notionally, and I agree if these were APA cards, or I would, you know, I could make my changes on a play-by-play basis easily in a tabletop football game, no doubt about it, I'd do it if there's a way to take advantage of it. But I'm also the guy who says you got to be able to quickly get in the huddle, the notion that you need to kneel at the 1 yard line at any appropriate situation. So I'm your easiest customer to sell on this, and I'm still saying this seems like a really hard thing to sell to teams, fans, whatever. You're right. The Trailblazers always have a chance, and the mathematicians could make it work. Maybe.
And I would never do this without the analytics team running this and refining it and applying it and Lamar's buy-in. Because if Lamar hates this, this is stupid. If Lamar won't buy into this, it's stupid.
Basically. Then there'd be Lamar leverage of his next contract even being here would be that he wouldn't want that. So
yeah, it's a Super Bowl for Miami in 3 years, Ken. That's what it really would be. But you know, let's talk about someone else. Do you want to talk about someone who's easy to kind of say, hey, we're just going to load manage him, or do we want to talk about someone where conventional non-Ravens fans wouldn't expect this guy to have this kind of impact where we need to protect him because of his position?
Let's go with the obvious one, since you went with the most unobvious ones of all first. So,
Trey Hendrickson, he's 30 plus. He missed last year. Yep. We paid him $30 million or something a year. He is a specialist at pass rushing and sacking the quarterback, where he can line up against the left tackle and win in the fourth quarter, and the numbers bear it out. He's one of the best pressure rates, best pressure to sack rates. In terms of the war fake stat that the AI was trying to give me, he is 1.0 and above when he has a healthy season. This is a person who, with the Ravens scheme, there's not much buy-in. Hey, we want you to do what you came in here to do that we paid you $30 million to do in the fourth quarter, third and seven, in December, in January, sack the quarterback and win the game, right? And we took Zion Johnson. Two guys who can eat up those rundowns and keep them healthy. And for me, I would take it a step further, because this man is in his 30s. He costs so much money. There's no one else who can do his job. And sacking the quarterback without blitzing is so paramount in terms of having a Super Bowl caliber defense that I would push this load management and say, Trey, I'm really sorry. You're still going to get your $30 million. You might not get your bonus, but unless it's second and seven, third and five or more in a high leverage down, is that fourth quarter? Is that second quarter? The analytics can bear that out. Is it December? Is it November? All those things. I would be like, literally, you're not playing. I want you the most fresh all the time, the least chance of injury. And when you're in there.
Okay. You had it figured out that you're playing Lamar Jackson 25% less of the time.
Yeah.
Now, 2 years ago, I'm going to look up what the snap total was for Trey Hendrickson.
Okay, please. Yeah.
And I want you to tell me, he's 2 years older, obviously, at this point, but in 2024, Trey Hendrickson, let's see, I've got a special team snaps. That's not doing me good. Okay. Played 823 snaps, which is way too many.
Too many.
823 snaps 2 years ago. And not a terrible run defender, but he's not certainly known for being a run defender. In fact, a lot of people say he's lousy at that. I don't really completely agree, but it's
not just his ability as a run defender, Ken. It's what is his strength relative to how devastating would it be if he tore his oblique again, right?
You don't have to sell me at all on this. I want you to give me a snap total that you can accept in a 17-game season.
Half
of the snaps?
Yes.
Okay, half of the snaps or half of his snaps from 24. So you want him at 407, 410 snaps, or 550?
400 snaps.
I mean, that is possible. It's on the outside. Let's say he plays 16 games, 25 snaps a game. That would be not outrageous, I don't think. And they do have Tavius and Zion look like they're ready to take a lot more snaps. You know, Mike Green is probably going to play some early and some late. They're going to have some kick inside options. They may have another vet come in. And they've got Calais Campbell now, who gives you effectively edge depth as well. So I'm not saying it's not possible. By the way, Calais Campbell, interestingly enough, at age 39 last year, played 524 defensive snaps, plus another 144 on special teams.
Now,
how
he's
freaking
someone,
incredible is that?
He's someone I want him to play more snaps, Ken. That man is the Hulk. He just doesn't get hurt. He's incredible. I'm so glad.
All right.
anyway,
I'm with you on Hendrickson, that there's a way to play him significantly less without him hopefully forcing the issue by becoming injured. That you can find a way to do that. And the Ravens have always been a good rotational team, defensive line. So yeah. Madubuike coming back, I think the same situation. You can avoid playing him on a lot of downs by having.
Man, I hope he, just as a quick aside, I hope Madubuike starts on PUP. We got a lot of defensive linemen to try and maximize our 53-man roster after camp. He's coming off a neck injury, Ken.
Yep.
Give him 6 weeks off and play him slow. Slowly build him up. We want him December, January.
The Ravens have been really good in their history about arranging for midseason reinforcements through aggressive use of the PUP program. So I think that PUP designation, I think they might do that. There's people who are already saying it's ridiculous that he's not going to be playing till October or whatever. In a way, it's not Madubuike's call. The Ravens can say, wait a minute, we believe in you completely. We're happy you're coming back, but we're going to hold you out for half a year here, or we're going to hold you out for 6 weeks. I don't think that's necessarily outrageous. And they do have guys. They have guys right off the bat, particularly with having Campbell. They're in better shape on that.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Did you have another player though that's in the middle, because the Lamar Jackson thing is really out there, and the Trey Hendrickson thing is completely realistic. Yes. Who's the player in the middle?
Kyle Hamilton.
Okay.
He plays safety, so you think, eh. But if you actually watch the Ravens, when he's in that star role under a Mike McDonald, or dare I say, Mike McDonald-esque defense, where he's playing up and he's blitzing and he's doing all kinds of crazy things, he's so impactful. When I did my little war AI simulator, he was near Troy Polamalu level impact. And by eyeball test, we all know Troy Polamalu's impact, not only during the season, again, playing near the line of scrimmage and blitzing and doing crazy stuff, but in the playoffs. So Kyle Hamilton is a slight build maniac. He had the disillusion of playing with Roquan Smith next to him for the last 3 years. And so he plays super aggressive, which I love. He blows people up. He throws his body around. But I got to tell you, Ken, short of limiting his snaps, which we could do, one thing I would do is go over to Roquan and say, hey, I love your enforcer style. But if you see Nate Wiggins or Kyle Hamilton wrapping someone up, you need to hit the brakes and not smash both of them. I can't tell you how many times you watch a game and Kyle Hamilton goes down. It's every
friendly fire
fourth game, and you go, oh no, is he hurt? And then he gets up and he plays anyway. But he's missed 2 to 3 games on average every game since he's become impactful his second season.
Okay. I mean, it is kind of the ultimate question for both Jackson and Hamilton is, how can they play their own style of football and not get hurt? Because their own style of football is the best of each at their respective positions and means an awful lot to the Baltimore Ravens. So in Hamilton's case, he's so much of a difference maker near the line of scrimmage. How are you going to jury rig that? Are you going to play Starks closer on some downs and rotate the two and have him on the back end? Because that just puts Starks at risk.
Okay. What I would actually do is just have different defenses for different meaningful impacts of games. So you can throw Kyle Hamilton back into deep safety and play 2 safety and, I don't know, put someone else at slot or not at slot. You know, you can change up your defensive attack. And then when it's more impactful, you move Kyle up and then he can play that. So you are naturally protecting him by playing him further away from the line. So yes, you take away his impact.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's a good reminder that whatever you're carrying around, you don't have to carry it around alone. Life is a journey. Some days are great. Some days you're lying awake at night thinking about work, family, money, your health, your future, all of it. And when that happens, it's easy to feel like you're supposed to figure everything out by yourself. But nobody has all the answers alone. Having someone with you, someone to listen, understand, and help you sort through what's going on can make a real difference. And BetterHelp can match you with a fully licensed therapist. With more than 30,000 therapists, they do the initial match work so you can focus on what you need. And if the match isn't right, you can switch at any time. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
But he's not bad at deep safety. You just wait to use him up when it's the most important. Be that quarter game situation, playoffs, December, all that stuff. but you protect him from himself. And I don't mind blitzing him, Ken. When he blitzes, he doesn't get hurt. That's eyeball test, but he does not get hurt when he blitzes. He gets hurt when he's blowing up a screen or he's chasing down a guy who ran an out pass and then Roquan comes over and smashes him. That's usually when he gets hurt.
Okay. This needs a metric to start with.
Yep.
I'd be very opposed to doing this. I'd be as opposed to doing this as deciding, hey, Jim Palmer shouldn't throw this many pitches. We need to put him in the bullpen every third start and he can pitch two games in there because we think that's a better way to load management. I'd be as opposed as something like this. So this is a very difficult sell. The Lamar Jackson, a very difficult sell. The Hendrickson thing, an easy sell. And all the positions where load management currently exists, easy sell.
I totally hear you, but I completely disagree. If they're not there, so let's put it this way. You make none of these changes. You don't figure out some way to protect them more. And you go up to 18 games. And you continue with their current play style and the number of injuries that they have. How likely is it that both Kyle Hamilton and Lamar Jackson over the next three seasons are both going to be fully healthy in December, January, and hopefully February?
Well, I mean, it's less likely for any player. If you're saying their play style particularly, they probably do put themselves more at risk because of the extended plays and the Hamilton's, you know, willingness to take on bigger men and whatnot, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage. All those things are legitimate additional injury risk, but they're done in the name of getting an extraordinary performance in both cases.
Right. But I'm not talking about eliminating all of their play. I'm talking about maybe we sacrifice, again, going for that second seed, two wins a season on average.
I hear you. And notionally, I'm with you. Is that, you know, you find some snaps that these players can take off or do something different. I'm more on board with Hamilton than I am with Lamar because there's just no way. There's just no way the drop off is a cliff drop off to Huntley from Lamar as soon as you lose a game because Huntley was in there for some portion of it, you know, I think you're done with the system. I think you're literally done with the system as soon as it happens once.
Without proof of concept, Ken, to your point, there's no way that Lamar Jackson will sign up for this because really it's sitting him without like a huge lead. The other two guys, though, Trey Hendrickson, it's already acceptable. And with Kyle Hamilton, you can literally just adjust his role through the defense.
So he plays every snap, except he's just at a different spot doing it.
And you tell Roquan, hey, if you see a skinny guy on your own team, don't smash into the pile. I think just those two adjustments alone might net us several more games over the next three seasons of both of our most important players on our defenses.
Really interesting theory. And at a notional level, I can agree with this. I am the easiest sell of all because I'm a very heavy mathematical guy in terms of how I want football addressed. But this has got to start with what are the important plays? And that's what's very difficult to define. And as soon as you start on this, is the important play is third and six. Well, you know, somebody else says, well, no, it's not. It's the play that got you to third and six. That's the play that's just as important. Well, it's not actually true, by the way, but it'd be interesting. You have to go through that process of selling that. So the mathematicians that look at football need to take about 5 years, I'd say right now, to basically build up theory on what leverage means by play for people to say, yeah, okay, this really does make sense for us to use on our star offensive players to have them not on the field for every play, including offensive linemen potentially.
Correct.
Where you have more teams adopting rotational, your best players take a series off each half automatically just because you want to be fresher that way. Or your quarterback takes a series off each half for the same reason and you try and make it be the least impactful. It's such a tough sell that it needs to start with a good solid mathematical foundation to leverage. And I at present, I'm not aware of that. And by the way, anybody listening to this pod who knows even of something that's in its infancy, I'd love to see it about leverage by play that is potentially more than just game leverage, but it could be season leverage, you know, championship leverage, or even like I'm talking about, you know, what level of the playoffs are you going to get in at?
I think that you should reach out to that kid from the Wharton School.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting one. He's a PhD student, and his professor is a world class probabilist. So they would be interesting ones to talk to about this exact thing.
And if it's going to take 5 years, Ken, I would also add to kind of the paradigm of how they're looking at it to make sure that they include a model where it's an 18 game season, because I can't imagine that there will not be 18 games soon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I think the players are on board. The funny thing is, it's kind of paradoxical. The players' desire for a larger roster is not necessarily real. Because what that means is another sliver of the pie is taken away by a 54th player, for example, just on the margin. One additional player means, you know, one nth less of the total revenue sharing goes to the, you know, the other players. So you might have, if you have a $300 million cap, it might literally mean 1/300th of the salary cap is gone to pay this one player. And, you know, star players aren't really in favor of that.
Right.
It sounds like they should be. Sounds like they should always be in favor of larger rosters and having more players. And I think the owners in general are fairly agnostic to it, other than when you look at benefits. And I really don't have an idea of just how much the benefit costs are.
Yeah.
But it's like the full-time equivalent cost. You have the base salary is a significant portion, but oftentimes benefits is about the same. And you know, you end up paying huge amounts of health care, 401k contributions, bonuses, all the other things that go with that. But for the NFL have C-suite level packages that go with that. The benefits behind that are just incredible. The only people that really have better benefits are the top level C-suite people who may have all sorts of other protections about their future career. What the players get in terms of health benefits and dental, it's all top of the line stuff. So,
it really, you know, even just the notion of adding an 18th game, what is that? 1/17th, or if you compare to NBA terms, 80 games, what is that? Like 5 more games on an NBA season, plus or minus. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how not even upset the NBA players would be? Just the stars wouldn't play. Because it's already built, baked into them that, hey, if you have anything going on, just sit. I mean, stars don't play because they want to be there in the playoffs. That's already acceptable. And if you look at 5 starting players to what, 12 players on the actual team, I mean,
it is very different by sports. It's a legitimate thing. I mean, baseball has got, you know, the Orioles injury list right now is just ridiculous in terms of the number of players on it. Obviously, very frustrating. But they're not. It's not like they're not real injuries. They do need to have a bunch of pitchers on the place. Hockey is completely the opposite of basketball. The players there think they're wussies if they don't play a game, and they're probably told so by their teammates, maybe by their coaches,
probably.
They're very vague about injury designations and whatnot as it is. But I the basketball thing is first of all, I don't completely know exactly how bad the situation is, but it's obviously a tanking league, and it's a league that has a huge problem with that. Now, hockey has a big tanking problem, and football has a moderate tanking problem.
Okay. Yep.
Baseball
has recently.
What's this?
We've watched tanking recently. It got out of hand.
We have. Oh, you mean the Browns, for example, last year playing
The Raiders, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, sorry.
You're right. We certainly have seen it. It's probably less of a problem in baseball than other places, but it's still potentially a problem there as well in terms of teams, relativizing the draft pick. But baseball is the draft pick has the least value. So you of all sports, so you really aren't incented to tank for it the same way.
Right. And kind of taking a view of the forest from the trees, to your point, hard sell on this kind of radical idea. I think I've identified a possible solution that isn't fleshed out, and maybe it's not the real solution of load management, but the problem is injuries and availability. And that problem is only going to get worse as Lamar gets older. It's only going to get worse as we go to 18 games. And so the Ravens have a robust analytics team. I don't have the hubris to think that they haven't at least started to consider this ahead of time. Mm-hmm. God, I wish that we knew someone who could come onto your podcast and at least talk about their initial ideas, but we never will. I don't think.
It won't be the Ravens. They won't give out that, or that person will be fired. No longer a Ravens employee.
Of course
they did.
Yeah.
But there is another angle to attack this, and that is in some sort of predictive injury management, where you do what they've done for some South American soccer teams, and you have the players go into a chamber where they can look at heat maps of muscles and whatnot and try and figure out where, you know, are there risks of injuries that are already presenting themselves. And if you could attack load management from that direction, you know, if at halftime all the players go through, drop their drawers and do whatever they need to do to go into the chamber and get checked out for muscle. And one of the problems with this is soccer's uniforms lend themselves very much to this. Football uniforms, they're a pain to get in and out of. So it's a much, much harder thing to you know, measure muscle heat and whatnot on a person like that. So anyway, I think there's other ways to approach this problem that aren't strictly like, we know injuries are going to happen. How do we minimize their importance, or how do we minimize the risk of them happening to our best players? I think it's also, is there some predictive injury avoidance that can be improved? And I hope that the NFL gets there. They're very incented to do it. Every team out there is very incented to solve this problem.
Flag football, here we come, 2030, Ken.
All right, David, great having you on. Always great chopping it up, even on a discussion like this, which can get kind of spirited. It's really nice to talk to somebody about an interesting new thought experiment like this. Tell folks where they can talk to you on Twitter.
No Twitter for me, Ken.
Okay,
understood. Appreciate it. Thank you. And, you know, it is really fun. Thank you for going through this exercise. And it's all good fun to just try and figure out different ways. How can we shave off or add to percentages of the Ravens realizing their Super Bowl window? Because I'm just going to leave you with this. I'm going to rah-rah us. We have Lamar Jackson, right? One of the best players in the world. And 2 years ago, we let the best defensive mind walk out, and now we have Jesse Minter. So Mike McDonald won a Super Bowl without Kyle Hamilton and without Lamar Jackson. He had Sam Darnold and guys who are not as good as Kyle Hamilton. And so now we might get both again, like 2023, and we got 3 years to win a Super Bowl, I think, with Lamar's age. So let's do it. Let's figure it out.
I'm all for it. I'm all for figuring it out.
Let's get it.
Like, artificially figuring out like how long this window is exactly where we part paths. I'm going to tell you.
Tell me.
So, no. Yeah. No. I it's another episode. Another episode is not worth it. But David, I appreciate having you on. Other folks out there, please use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. And if you have questions, I'll try and direct them to the proper show. Perhaps we create a short that I talk with someone else about. Perhaps we create a short and you come on it. Or I'll try and do a 1 minute video, or give it to the boss in Friday Morning GM, whatever it might be. David, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.